I'm Debbie Draby from the Clinical Excellence Commission, and I'm pleased you can join us for this four-part podcast series with Claire Skinner and Dane Chalkley. This podcast is part of a four-part series, and it's part four on M&M leadership and case selection, right material, right people. In this segment, we explore vulnerability in leadership and multidisciplinary participation. Claire and Dane discuss the importance of normalizing human error and being able to reframe errors as a learning opportunity rather than alienating the clinician who made the error. Claire really emphasizes how errors are really a growth moment and being able to support clinician to grow and learn from those experiences and to share the level of insight that they have when that happens. They also talk about M&M leadership and the importance of modeling vulnerability and being able to demonstrate their own learning experiences from error. We also go into a discussion around civility and tribalism and the importance of thinking about that when we're looking at multidisciplinary engagement and discussions. So I hope you enjoy this segment and thanks for joining us.
I really try from the point of view as, you know, head of department and a chair of an M&M meeting. I try to remember what it was like to be a first term intern in the emergency department.
Terrifying.
And I'm actually surprised that people forget that. So I think that's what you've got to do. You've got to remember what it was like to be the first term intern and just how overwhelming it was.
So being able to position yourself.
Empathy. It's all about empathy and compassion and connection.
Where they're at in their development. And
it's about humanity. If we're human beings, we do things for a reason.
So, I mean, the paper that was written in the UK in the GMC to Air is Human, I think missed the point, because the actual expression is to Air is Human, to forgive is godly. Mm. Well, I think that's right. I think it's to Air is Human, to forgive is human too. Mm. And ultimately, we need to be focusing on how we look after each other and learn from our humanity.
And that's a really important thing you've just raised as well. The clinician who's been deeply involved in an incident, whether it's a mistake or a complaint or anything that's gone wrong, they've had the deepest learning of anyone in the team and they actually are your best ambassador for quality. And I see this happen time and time and again in health systems where something goes wrong, that clinician's held out to dry, removed from the system. And they are, in fact, the person that's had the best learning, and their experience is shared in a compassionate way that they want with other people is your best learning. But we write that off. It's a massive problem with our system that we don't engage those people, because I know the mistakes I've made clinically have absolutely shaped me as a clinical leader.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have that, there's a richness there that we ignore at our own peril.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a resource there for learning about the particulars of that case and the nuances of that, but also meta quality, learning about the processes, learning about how someone goes through that process, learning what an RCA is like to be in, and sharing that and sharing how that feels so that other people are either prepared or who've also been through that can say, yeah, I felt that too, and this is how we should look after each other and this is how we should support.
It's such a growth moment, and I think we're scared of it, so we push it away, but it's a growth moment, and it's where we need to support someone, encourage them and bring them into the team more than ever.
Being able to really, the level of insight that they've gained from that experience is so profound, isn't it? And we're not engaging that.
And you can make it positive.
I've had some of my junior, or some of my registrars, some of which have seen this, some of my colleagues, consultant colleagues, go through RCA processes, and you can see for weeks and weeks and weeks, you can see that they're still in the background, clock ticking. And then you've spoken to them initially and maybe sure that they're okay, and you counsel them and debrief them, and then you keep in touch, and then you can see how things change, you can see how things develop, you can see how they process, and that's as I said, that's a really rich source of A, humanity, and B, a learning opportunity for how we
We oscillate in our clinical confidence. I'll go through phases where everything goes right and I get confident, and then something goes a little bit wrong and I dip again and I oscillate. And I always hope that the thing that goes wrong is a tiny thing that doesn't impact on anybody other than me. And that will be enough to put me back into caution mode. And I think we all oscillate, and I think we don't acknowledge that publicly enough.
No. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can be hanging on an absolute high where you feel like a clinical legend, and then just one tiny conversation with someone can make you just drop to the bottom and feel deeply, deeply, you know, resonant to even go and see a patient, or talk to a patient, to even.
Or to pick up the phone. I think we need to get better at this in healthcare, don't we? Where we're much more empathetic to people.
And being able to share that's an experience that everybody has. Where, you know, something goes wrong and it's, you know, has a really negative impact on the patient, but also on them and their understanding of their capacity. And then
it's a big learning when you know, we're all on the phone or talking to colleagues all the time, and when they miss something, to actually check them in a really positive way. Mm. Say, have you thought of, instead of, no, you didn't get this.
Yeah.
I think when we're moving beyond the M&M a bit, but this is really important to remember. When someone misses something, they didn't do it deliberately. They were distracted or something, you know, there was transference with the patient. There's a whole bunch of reasons. So we need to be really mindful of that in all of our communication, not just the M&M. Yeah.
We had, in my health district, we've got a new sort of a forum, which is for the consultants and the heads of departments. And it's a Zoom forum in the evening, run by, you know, our very senior DMSs and executive DMSs, and the first one of the ones we had was about shared experiences, and that was for all doctors. Mm-hmm. And it was a group of consultants just sharing their experiences of error, of complaints through the ACCC, of their own ill health, of having junior members of staff become very unwell or taking their own lives and things like this, and that sort of them demonstrating their vulnerability, demonstrating how these things have affected them, is incredibly powerful. And I think that is a part of something that you can bring to an M&M meeting, to a quality meeting, as we said earlier, just demonstrating that we all make mistakes, and it's about how you learn from them, not about, you know, beating yourself up about it.
I think that's a really critical point around the power of that shared experience, because you're normalising it and you're giving people permission to be as vulnerable and to know that this is part of the experience in your profession.
There's no doubt that consultants and senior clinicians and senior members of nursing staff are put up on pedestals and are perceived as being invulnerable, as being infallible. And it's just so not true. And hiding that away and not sharing it with people, you're missing on lots of important
things. But actually, I think some of the incivility and bad behaviour we see is projecting that anxiety.
Yeah.
100%, yeah.
Because you've got more safety nets the more junior you are, and the more you get senior and you don't have the safety nets anymore. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, there's more at stake, isn't there?
Yeah.
Greater risk to being vulnerable. And
yeah, that's right. And you know, I think when you're on that pedestal and you know you're on that pedestal, then you've got quite a long way to fall, and it can be a bit windy and worrying out there. And I think people do. I personally don't really care anymore, and I'm quite happy to, you know, demonstrate my vulnerability. And that's not because I'm incredibly confident in what I do. It's just because I think I've moved away from thinking that I am invulnerable and realizing that I've made enough mistakes now to know that, So what I have is I've got a failure friend, which is someone whose opinion I respect, but also I know is very kind. Mm, so when I do make a mistake, I go to them, and I know that he, who is someone, I think he's probably everyone in my department's failure friend, he probably gets peppered with, he's going to say kind things.
Yeah.
And I try to be that failure friend.
You try to be them.
But I say to my team, look, if something bad happens and you find yourself awake in the middle of the night, I'd far rather you rung me up and we talked it out than you did it by yourself. I think the best clinical leaders keep their feet firmly on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's how you do it. Like, you've got to do it in a way that people have confidence in you, but also that's clear that you're human and you're authentic and you're vulnerable too.
Yeah, 100%.
And it sounds like a really critical part of that is kindness.
It is, and it's so underrated, and it's so important. And if you took us, I'm sure if you took a stroll poll of year one medical students, year one nursing students, year one pharmacy, physio students, you'd say, why are you doing this? It's because I want to help people.
Yeah.
But then somewhere along the way we lose that sense and the kindness that we want to
The system is so tough on people. I see this as a manifestation of being in a toxic system is, you know, so I'm a big believer in civility save lives and being kind, but I also recognise that when people can't do that, it's because they can't, not because they want to be mean or nasty. Mm. It's because they have grown up in a toxic system and their resources are exhausted.
Yeah, absolutely. They've, because of their experiences, they've really got into that survival mode, haven't they, where
it's no longer safe
to be kind because,
throw something else which has sort of come up here, which is the notion of civility and tribalism, because it's very easy in your own team meeting to dump on another team who's not present. And I actually take great care as facilitator to make sure that doesn't happen as well, because we operate in a system. I think it's really important that an M&M meeting is multidisciplinary. So I don't think it should be just doctors. I work in a multidisciplinary environment. I love that I work in a multidisciplinary environment. I want the voices of the other professionals in my environment in the M&M. Because they'll often see things differently, which is really valuable. And I think the best, highest functioning teams get to the point where they see things together. I think civility is really important here. You've got to be really careful around your language. The M&M can have a little bit of levity. It can have a few jokes in it, but it can't be at anyone's expense, and particularly can't be at the patient's expense. I think any investigation, you do need to be aware always that this is someone's. It's someone else. Like, it's the patient is a real person. They have a family. They have a life, and you need to be respectful of that. So that's a real plug for this is a respectful place. Mm-hmm. Language must be polite. Yes, you can be a little bit light, but you can't do it at anyone else's expense. And you need to be aware as well of the system you work in. So it's not okay to say the orthopaedic registrar blah 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 blah, because the orthopaedic registrar is also in a system that's not working well. So you need to see all of it from a system perspective.
Yeah, that's really a critical point in terms of ensuring there's a respect for people, not just the patient, but other clinicians involved that.
Well, people often will see minutes from M&M meetings go through the quality committees and they're seen by other teams. And quite often I see, and maybe I'm oversensitive to it, but I see ED did this, ED did that in other teams' M&M notes.
Yeah.
And I think basically we should see ourselves as part of a continuous system.
Yeah.
And if you see something that you didn't think went right in someone else's team, then you have a responsibility to talk about it and nut it out, not to just shuffle it away.
Yeah. In situations like that, have you had experience of inviting other teams in where you think, and has that been useful?
Yeah, it has. Dane talked about paediatric M&Ms. Yeah. Paediatrics would be the most common team we invite in as well.
Mm.
You've got to be careful.
You've got to be very careful.
Yeah. And I think ultimately if it's a case where you want to discuss, the events, the human factors, then it's important that you choose a case where you know the clinician that was involved from the other team is someone who would agree with those core principles. Mm. There's no point in just inviting the whole neurosurgical team, for example. I would invite the neurosurgical registrar who was there if I felt that they could contribute to a safe and well-intentioned discussion. If it was just a matter of putting a tick in a box, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. So that understanding of human factors is really critical for the
conversation. Yeah, and I think understanding of what you're trying to achieve from a quality meeting or an M&M, again, that sort of that partisan attitude and all that tribalism is really, really important to overcome. And I think that can be really useful, inviting people from other teams. Mm. Having, there's Tom from, from orthopedics. Yeah. So thanks, Tom, what did you think? I think it went really well, but there were obviously some challenges. And then that person becomes a person who's learning with us towards better patient outcomes. So everyone sees that person and that team in the right light.
Mm.
And that they can contribute towards our learning as well. And I think that's a really important, two-way. That's a symbiotic relationship, which is really important because, as Claire said, we're all working in one big system.
Absolutely.
And tribalism is a form of cognitive bias.
Yeah.
So I think one of the most successful joint M&Ms we've had in our emergency department was actually with the mental health team. Mm. ED and mental health traditionally have difficult relationships. Our shared patient group are highly vulnerable and complicated.
Mm.
And doing that together was wonderful because suddenly everyone see the other side of the system. Well, the reason that person was an ED for that long was because of this, this, and this. Mm. And the reason we referred to you then was because we were worried about this, this, and this. And it's been fantastic for the teamwork and the empathy between the two teams.
Mm. It's really building those relationships, isn't it?
But you don't want to do it every time.
Yeah. No.
I can't see the point in having an M&M where you do go through Krebs cycle or talk about the complexities of achieving a great one view with a video laryngoscope, McGrath versus CMAQ, or whether or not this particular herniography or osteotomy is the right thing to do in this particular situation. I mean, look at the angle of the button. You know, there's no point in that because you've lost your audience, because your audience is going to be multidisciplinary and it's supposed to be an interprofessional learning experience. Mm. So you have to pitch it right as well. And again, that is the role of the facilitator.
But that's what I do there is you don't go through the detail, but I provide a whole bunch of links, which I send out the slides afterwards with links, which are, you know, here you can look up this here, or here's a, you know, here's a great article about this.
And that's the challenge you find. You both mentioned the content needs to be pitched at a level where you're engaging the multidisciplinary participation, and you don't want to get too technical or specific.
Yeah.
That's not relevant to the other disciplines, or they can't really engage with that material. It's not their areas of expertise. And then it's around how to best present that in a meaningful way with the principles and the themes. It's a skill to do that, isn't it?
It is, and I think ultimately if you're going to present a big case or a couple of big cases, then sharing the presenting between the specialties is really important.
Okay. Yeah.
Having a nurse presenter, a physio presenter, a pharmacy presenter, someone from the sexual assault team, someone from whoever, as long as you do prepare quite well in advance with that presenter to make sure that they understand what the principles of what you're hoping to achieve are.
I'm quite so picky about who is invited to the meetings. Like mostly, I think you need to make sure it's the core team and they know and trust each other. Mm. And occasionally I've invited members from other teams into our M&M meeting, but I've done it with a lot of preparation and making sure people are comfortable with that. I think, you know, we have stuff that's routine in the M&M that comes up all the time and that's fairly safe, but occasionally, particularly in ED, M&Ms will have the big sentinel case, a really big, hard thing. I think, you know, the ones that probably come to mind most are the death or a significant misadventure of a child particularly.
Oh.
And those are really difficult and you've got to make sure you give them space. And it's really tempting to invite other people in to discuss some of these cases, but I think actually it's about the core group. So if you want it to be safe, you need to really think about who else is in the room and make sure they're, if you do invite other people in, like we will invite paediatrics in occasionally, I've invited the mental health team occasionally into our ED M&M for big cases. But you need to make sure you talk to them offline and make sure they know what their role is and what the culture of the meeting is in advance.
So what we've done is we've established that every third M&M is actually a paediatric joint M&M. So what we've done is it allowed ourselves and our paediatric colleagues to actually develop a style within that.
Thanks for listening to this podcast series on M&M leadership and case selection, right material and right people. I really hope you enjoyed it. Please note that this is one of a four-part series, and I hope that you have the opportunity to listen to the other three segments as I continue this conversation with Dane and Claire and explore the conversation around choosing the right cases. Dane and Claire talk about the importance of leadership in M&Ms. They also talk about their experiences of safety sciences and the importance of human factors. We explore multidisciplinary participation, and it's a real opportunity to listen in and really hear the level of vulnerability and experiences that Dane and Claire talk about as they explore their M&M leadership. Listen as Claire and Dane discuss their insights and the lessons learned that they've had along the way in supporting M&Ms. I'm Debbie Draby from the Clinical Excellence Commission, and I'm pleased that you can join us in this conversation with senior leaders as they explore the guiding principles of effective morbidity and mortality meetings in action. This podcast series has been developed to explore the experiences and insights from leading M&M meetings. Look out for more podcasts as we continue this conversation with clinicians as they share their journey and learning. I hope you find it useful, and if you'd like to contribute to this conversation, please let me know. Thank you.